You
ready? Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. 3, 2.
Welcome, people. Welcome. My name is David. This is the Most High Show, and I am your host. If you're unfamiliar with the Most High Show, this is a platform where we are doing our best to end stigmas. Two of the stigmas we're trying to end is the stigma of addiction and drugs and alcohol, and the stigma of God, our higher power. All right. This evening, we have a special guest that is sitting in our decadent seat of service. You'll be hearing her story pretty soon. Before that, though, we're going to have a mystic moment that I'll be bringing in this evening. It's a little bit of a change. And you'll see all that right after this. My brother Jeff, please.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Welcome back, folks. Welcome back. All right. So like I said just a second ago, we're going to start off with the mystic journey or the mystic moment. Yeah. And I'm bringing in the mystic moment this evening, but I'm not mystical, dude. But yeah, I'm going to do my best.
Show him that.
I'll try my best to be.
Show him that hair bun, bro. So, that's
not even tight right now. It'll fall. It'll look all messy.
That's even more mystic.
But so what I wanted to talk about tonight, the topic that I wanted to bring up, I guess I should introduce Rhonda because she might be in on the conversation. Yeah. So Rhonda, welcome. She is an author. She is going to be sharing a different perspective of things that, you know, we're not we're familiar with it, but not on a platform to discuss it on our podcast. So this is going to be exciting. And we're truly honored to have you. So thank you for being here.
I'm excited.
All right. So, all right, back to the moment, the mystic moment. All right. So this is what's been on my mind. I was thinking about this today because Christian and I talked about me bringing it in today because we're changing it up a little bit. So what was on my mind was a lot of times, you know, in my job, I deal with people in early recovery or trying to get to recovery or just starting out a life of sobriety. And one of the things that I always say is, listen, man, like you got to be open-minded and you got to be willing to do what it takes, you know, which is like, I think that's a good thing to say and it's true. But then I kind of like bring it into myself and I think about myself, you know, just getting in to sobriety. And I always question, like, how willing was I? Was I willing to do whatever it takes? Was I really open-minded? Because, I mean, a lot of times when they talk about people going into sobriety or start working the steps and doing things of that nature, they have a moment, like it's almost like a very spiritual awakening type moment as they're entering sobriety. And you know, we often talk about hitting a bottom, you know, and then that moment of desperation kind of encourages you to do whatever it takes to stop being like that.
Oh yeah.
And that wasn't necessarily the case for me. For me, it was more of a process, you know? And so I started researching willingness, and the sixth principle of AA is about willingness. And it's about, you know, the difference between willing, like being willing to do something or just wanting to do something. Mm. So that, like, you know, caught my eye, you know, the difference between really wanting to be sober, but being willing to do whatever it takes. It's a big difference. And then I looked up some scripture, and Jesus says, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak.
Yes.
So that kind of like really, you know, and the more I think about that, like in my own application of like me trying to work the steps and being sober, it was all about, to me, it was like my higher power. I'll surrender to my higher power. And I don't think it was me, like, I will do whatever it takes. I think my surrender is what made me go through whatever it took to stay sober. That's my gist on it. Now, Christian, my question is, whenever you started, you know, taking sobriety and like thinking about doing it and not using anymore, where was willingness in your life?
Oh, Well, to be honest, it wasn't really.
Is that mystic? Is that a mystical
yeah,
thing?
Dude.
That's not a mystical.
Don't worry, bro.
It's a good topic.
I'll take us there.
All right.
Yeah, no, I was in a rock and hard place. Mm-hmm. You know, like I remember distinctively, I've told my stories many times mm-hmm. over the years. And I used to tell the story that I had this moment of honesty and, you know, willingness to tell a coworker of the company I worked for when he said, hey, they're looking at you crazy because, you know, I was doing drugs all night and drugs during the day. And they were like, why are you asleep in your car in the middle of the day? You know, like what's going on with you? And so I used to tell a story that I got honest. But what I realized is what I was trying to do was it was more manipulation. I knew I was in trouble.
Trying to
say, so let me just go, hey, I'm an addict. That's why I'm messing up.
Whoa.
I see that now.
That's a big reveal, bro.
Oh, that's a reveal.
That's a reveal.
That messed you up 7 years in. You're like, oh, wait a minute. I wasn't being honest. I was just trying to manipulate.
Trying to save what you had.
Then they were like, oh, it's cool. We're going to help you out. We're going to send you to rehab. Now I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah. Now I got to go to rehab. You know? Yeah. And then I have to ask my wife to pick the spot. And then she picks the place and she shows me the website. And on the website, I went to this place called Penfield Christian Homes. And on the website, this is video. It's a horrible video. I mean, it's just basically a slideshow, right?
A PowerPoint?
Yeah. This is just a guy clicking images. But one of the images was these men circled up, like praying. And we have Rhonda here, so I'm not going to say what I actually said. But I was like, oh,
yeah,
I got to go there.
That's the spot.
I don't know.
You got to get
is that willingness.
That. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know that that was. I mean, I guess it was willingness because I did drive myself to rehab.
Right.
Right. I didn't have to do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I felt like it wasn't. When I hear the word willingness, I feel like there's a of my own free volition. And I don't think I necessarily at that point in time. I think it was the it was there was a point when I realized I couldn't continue what I was doing. If I was going to lose the job, I wasn't going to have the money to keep up with my drug habit. So this and the life that I would have to live in order to maintain my drug use was not a life I was willing to go down.
Right.
So it was kind of just I was screwed.
Yeah. Like and you I said, rock in a hard place.
Yeah.
But it put you in a position to like be willing to, you know, get out of, try, do your best to get out of there.
Maybe. Yeah. Right. I don't even know if it was willingness.
Yeah. I had to do it. Yeah. I had to. It was over if not. Yeah.
But to your, like, it is the sixth principle.
Yeah.
Willingness. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's a reason why it's the sixth. Right. Because you've already
been through,
surrendered. Yeah. You've made a decision. You've cleaned up, like you've confessed all the stuff you've been through. Now you're at step six, which is you becoming willing for God to take away your character defects. Right. Because
you're open to sincerely saying, God, please take the good and the bad.
Right.
Let it all be you.
By this point, there's enough space to where now I am in control of my faculties. I have some ownership of the decisions I make now at this point, at that point in recovery, ideally. So now it is a decision. It's a conscious. Now I have to implement willingness.
Right.
In the beginning, ideally, we're getting through those first five steps pretty quickly because you know this. The longer someone stays like clean and they haven't gone through that moral inventory of the steps, the harder it is for them to actually do the moral inventory because the pain of their past isn't so relevant anymore.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it fizzles. It has to be, there has to be something fresh. You have to remember it. You have to be on it. There still has to be a sting of that in there, you know, for you to really dig it up, you know. But another thing, I was just sitting here thinking about it, like willingness is a big word in every aspect, in so many different aspects of your life, you know. And I was thinking about you, Rhonda, like, you know, the willingness it took to, you know, to expose yourself through literature, to write a novel, to write a book, not a novel, like a biography kind of, of like a memoir of your life and like all the things that you went through. Where did the willingness of doing that come from?
It wasn't easy. As a matter of fact, I just wrote it. It just was published last year. Every time I'd start to write a page, I would put it down for months and couldn't do it. I literally would feel physically sick. Right. I knew it was going to happen and I knew I was going to write it, but it took a long time. Our son died in 2016. Mm-hmm. And I had written a book before called Who Hit the Light Switch, mm-hmm. When I went through postpartum depression, and I never got it published. Yeah. And I thought that was hard. But to write a book about the death of your child is a whole new level of pain, and you have to dig deep.
Well, it's a whole new level of like vulnerability to speak about it.
Yes.
And I just found out you're an author today, mm-hmm. and I read 45 pages. Oh. So I know about the book that you never got published. Okay. I read the excerpt you put in there. So it's an amazing read so far. So it was awesome. I guess that's our mystic moment, folks.
That's a good one.
You like that?
All right.
Anything else? Anything else you want to add?
No.
Okay. So we will go to a break and then we will shoot into Rhonda's story.
Why Most High Media? Because I don't have the answers. Other people do. And learning from the experiences, the stories, the perspectives, seeing people who have been through the darkest of circumstances and then have come out of it on the other side and have lived extremely exciting, fulfilling lives and tapped into a way of being and a way of living, but it's actually real and obtainable. That's why.
You don't get to take a break. There's no breaks in life.
Oh, hey guys, we're back. again, you know, this is a different angle of, this is a different angle on our platform. You know, we usually share stories of people that are entering sobriety, living a life of sobriety, into recovery, you know, and that's usually the platform that we discuss on the Most High Show. But somebody was, you know, cool enough to come on our show and show us a whole different perspective on a lot of things that she has been through. And it ties in definitely to the Most High Show, you know, most definitely. And we are going to speak with Rhonda about your life and and what you've been through and how you're handling your journey right now.
Okay. Thank you.
And Christian will be hosting and I'll be sitting back with plugs.
Yeah.
Of I'll interlude.
Everything. We're going to work together.
Yeah.
Let's be a team.
Yeah.
I am honored.
It really isn't much of a shift because what we essentially are doing is telling stories of overcoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what I see when I see you as somebody mm-hmm. who overcame. Mm-hmm. The thing about an addict story is some of it feels self-inflicted, but then when you really hear this addict story, you realize, oh, this is a lot of us come from traumatic past, broken families, things like that, that put us in the perfect situation to mm-hmm. become addicts. Right.
Right.
So in starting with your story, where's a good place to start?
Let's just start. Well, I thought I had the perfect life. I had three children. Caleb was our oldest. And then I had Mackenzie and Micah. And I was a stay-at-home mom. I can honestly say we did not grow up. We did not raise our children around alcohol or, mm-hmm. or drugs or anything. We're kind of just... A great life. And I remember hearing stories of children dying, and I thought, if my child died, I would just go ahead and bury me with mm-hmm. my child because I won't be able to make it.
Yeah.
That's how I knew, like, I wouldn't be able to handle it. Mm-hmm. And then when death knocks on your door without a warning, and you realized, I've got to make it. And so... Caleb was a musician. He was going to KSU. He was 6'4", a personality that lit up a room. He was tall, charming, handsome, loud, at times annoying because he was so loud. Loved to make people laugh. He wrote music. Lots of music. He even wrote a song called You're My Vaccine. And I said, wow, that song would be a hit right now.
Right,
right now in the times we're living in. I've got to, you know, get that song out there. Life was good. Life was really good. Caleb, like a lot of young people ventured out sometimes in ways he shouldn't have. He would, you know, do things that we weren't always happy about, and like drinking or smoking pot. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Mom. but he wasn't addicted. He was just
living a college life. I mean, that's not too far off of a typical
just
person going,
you know, what, in other words, to me, what I really want to stress before I get into it is, mm-hmm. you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I always tell people, you don't know when that one drink can make you become an addict.
Wow.
You know, you don't know how that smoking weed once here or there can, mm-hmm. you can get so, you know, wanting it, craving it. And so Caleb was, he got a tattoo on February the 9th and called us and said, Mom, Dad, I don't feel good. We had him on speakerphone. And we're like, what's wrong? He said, I don't know. When I was getting the tattoo, I just didn't feel right. So we're like, okay, just go to bed, you know, take a Tylenol. He was going to go to work with his dad the 2 days, that Thursday. And Wednesday morning, it was just like an average day. I was at work. Life seemed good. I literally remember stopping in the middle of where I was working at a retail store and stopping. It was like 2 o'clock and going, life is good.
Mm.
Life is good. Little did I know, when I would check out of work at 3 o'clock, around 3:15, I would have this eerie feeling driving, like, my son didn't call me today. And Caleb always called me by 10 o'clock, 10 or 11. Mm. And I just had this feeling, and I was like, oh, just stop. You know, I was on my way to the dry cleaners. We were going on vacation next week as a family. Caleb was going. And I said, I text him, and that thing not delivered came back where it's green, and my heart started racing. And I called, and it would go directly to his voicemail. And I kept calling, and I had a feeling,
mm-hmm.
but not that,
wasn't right.
Yeah, but not that he was dead. And I called his roommate and I said, can you go check on Caleb? He goes, I just got home, but yeah, hold on. I'll go check on him. And he comes back screaming. He's not breathing. He's not breathing. And, at around 3:16, my life changed forever. It'll never, ever be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, call 911. He called 911 and I all of a sudden couldn't remember where I was. Yeah. I was driving, couldn't remember how to get to where he lived. My mind went blank.
Yeah.
And I kept calling my husband, mm-hmm. and it was during sports. So it was a really busy season, February, basketball or something. I don't remember. He wouldn't answer his phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept calling and finally he answered and I said, Caleb's not breathing. And my husband left work and I was on the phone with him trying to figure out how to get there. And yeah. Of all days, there was horrible traffic. I mean, Atlanta's always bad, but it was really bad. And I wanted to scream at everybody next to me and say, don't you know, my son,
yeah.
you know, I don't care about your baseball practice. All of a sudden it was about me, you
yeah.
know? And got there and I knew when I saw my husband standing at the gate and he said, oh. he's gone.
Hmm.
That the screams that can come out of your body, you can't even imagine. And we got there and the police said, we don't want you to see your son this way. So we never got to see him there. But, you know, then we're left into the planning of a funeral. And I don't know where you want me to go from there. I can go ahead and start to tell you.
Are just like blurry.
I mean, it has
to be just blurry.
Picking out a casket.
Yeah,
and
what is that?
Like, yeah, I come home and I'm like, to my sister, please get there before Micah, my youngest, mm-hmm. gets home. My daughter's in LA at the time. She was modeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get to my kids because, believe it or not, social media was boom, boom, boom. It was out there very, very
fast.
Quickly.
Yeah. Oh, they were already talking about
yeah.
him.
There, it was getting out. And my son, you could hear the wails of him screaming on the floor, mm-hmm. when I could hear him in the background screaming.
So he had found out via...
My sister told him.
Okay.
My sister got there to him when he got off the bus and she said, you know, before you hear from anybody.
Yeah.
My daughter, I called in LA and she's like, Mom, can I call you back? I'm at the beach. I called her friends first. And I said, no, honey, you can't. And she said, why? And I said, you know, your brother's passed away. And she began screaming, like, screams, crying out to God. We all just immediately started calling out Jesus, help us, help us. I'm pounding on the dashboard of my car. It was a movie, a horrible movie. And we made it home, and the next few days our home was full of people. You couldn't even walk. We had food for days and everything. And
so fast.
I remember at night my husband and I would always jolt up around 2 or 3 in the morning, and we would start crying. Well, come to find out, when we got the report back, the autopsy report, which I will go into, he died of fentanyl poisoning. It said accidental death, laced with fentanyl. And what Caleb did, he trusted somebody that night. He didn't take the Tylenol like we suggested.
Because of the tattoo.
He met a friend. Not a friend, but he met somebody and got what was packaged as a prescription pain pill. And there was one taken out of it, and it was laced with fentanyl.
Yeah. So it was like a Vicodin or Oxycontin.
Whatever that, yeah.
Yeah.
And it looked just like a prescription.
Yeah.
And he died from one pill. And what, you know, Caleb went to bed happy that night. Like never, and you know, never thinking, you know.
So he died in his sleep.
He died in his sleep, and we think it was about 3 in the morning when we kept waking up.
Yeah.
Wow.
After we got some times down and some some things that went on that evening, but he went home, met this guy at McDonald's, bought a pill, and thinking God had his McDonald's. His friend said he was so happy. Said, "Hey, buddy, I'll see you in the morning." Went to bed and never woke up. And that's where our life changed. And that's where I wrote the book of Just Once.
Yeah.
How one decision.
So how do you, when you're there, you know, on location, and now you need to get back home.
Oh, God.
Do you have to, and you guys are riding separate.
We left
your husband's
car.
Here.
He's left one of our cars there.
Okay.
Because
so we ride together.
So he was driving. I'm literally pounding. I didn't know I was that strong. He's like, "Please quit pounding. You're going to break the dashboard." And I'm like screaming at the top of my lungs. In the meantime, my family's screaming, like phone calls, you know. I just wanted to get to my kids. My daughter's trying to get a flight home from LA to Atlanta. She couldn't get a flight till the middle of the night. Screaming, like, how are we going to do this? You know, I'm thinking, what am I going to do when I get home? I will never forget, probably the first night, my mom and I slept. We didn't sleep. We were on the couch. He kept his same clothes on with his shoes. He never took his shoes off. Slept in the bed. We didn't sleep. You don't sleep, but you jolt. You jolt up and think, this isn't real. Where is he? You know. But he slept in his clothes, in his shoes. And I don't even know.
It's just all shock and trauma, man.
It,
you know,
it nobody, literally.
You're functioning. You're not even.
You're functioning.
You're just moving around. Basically.
And I think that's what grief does to you, even the first 2 years, to be honest, in a way, kind of, you're kind of have a blanket over you for a while. And I'm learning a lot about the brain now, and your body's in shock, so you almost handle it better. But when the reality hits of life, and you're kind of back into the normalcy, nothing's ever normal, then you realize I have to deal with this now for the rest of my life. Wow. This isn't just a shock anymore. This is real. This is my reality. It's not somebody else's reality. It's mine.
Yeah. And so many things, like even tough things, have like, you know, an end point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if I can get through this week.
Yeah.
This is going to suck. But if I can just get through this week.
Exactly.
You know, so you have a, you know, a ending, you know, a goal to get to.
Yes.
But when it's a tragic loss, I mean, you know, it's forever.
It is.
Yeah. The rest of your life.
It's forever. Know? And, you know, it's not like a pregnancy where you have something to look forward to after
this
9 months.
Yeah, that's the same thing. Yeah, you know.
No, right. And you have birthdays and you have Christmas.
Sure.
And then you have your other kids getting married and you're like, I'll never see my son get married. You know, all those things.
All those things have a side.
Yeah.
Thing now.
And yet in the midst, I have found God to be so faithful.
Amen.
Like, I don't know how people do it without the Lord, you know?
Hey, I say that. Really? I agree with you 100%.
The grace of God has sustained me. And there's times still that I battle. Like, there's a darkness You know, I think maybe many of you feel it too, but there's a darkness over the world, a heaviness. But when you're going through grief, that just compounds it, you know, and it's just, it's a lot to deal with. But I'm telling you, the book Just Once means one choice, you know, one decision you make can be, you know, life changing in a good way or a bad way. There are decisions you make, like when you decided, hey, I'm going to be sober. I don't like the way my life is anymore. That was a good thing. But how, you know, one decision.
Yeah.
And then just one more time, I would love to hold him. You know, I would love to smell him. And I'll even go in his closet or our closet and smell a jacket. And it's gone now. That fragrance of him is gone.
Mm.
And then I always say just one touch from God and we can have hope and we can have faith, you know, and we can live. We can live in the darkest of hours.
Yeah. So this happens in 2016?
Yes.
How long until you're able to, in talking about your relationship with the Lord, which seems like it's very central for you.
Yes.
Do you remember the first time after that happened when you were able to say thank you to God and for anything?
To be honest with you, this is a miracle and it's only the grace of God again, but at the funeral.
Really?
We had some songs. He loved No Longer a Slave. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know that song. And a few weeks before that, he said, Mom, come listen to the song, No Longer a Slave. So we had a live band and they sang that. And they opened up with Because He Lives, I Can Face Tomorrow. And we just literally stood up and began worshiping him. My kids were worshiping. And that's when I was like, thank you, God.
Wow.
Thank you, God. It was more of a worship service and an altar call. And because so many young people think, you know, I'm invincible. This won't happen to me.
Yeah.
I won't become an addict or I won't die. Because we want immediate gratification. Yeah. We want to get rid of the pain we're feeling. And even me, like I thought, hey, oh, let me have a glass of wine tonight. You know, I don't drink at all because I know it would be too easy. It would be too easy for me to, that day I'm having a hard day, to cover up that pain. Yeah. And for the rest
of my- go there with it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And for the rest of my life, I'm going to have to deal with it. So I'm just going to have to dive into the pain and trust God with it.
Yeah, I really think that's a testament to having a higher power, having a belief system and a faith system that, you know, it is an instant, you know, I think in the times of like where it is crazy and it's grief and it's like something that you humanly and fleshly cannot contain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, thank God for being God at that time, because he can put you in this, in as it's fresh, and you would think, you know, and you are like, you are insane at that time.
There's,
you're not like a sane person.
No,
you're going through the motion. Things are like waking you up. You don't know what's, you know, it's just, you're in shock.
You're in
shock. But the Lord will still put you in a place where you can love.
Yes.
You can love each other. You can appreciate the support around you. You notice these things. It's like all a fellowship that like God has put to like together to hug you and
I'm
to keep
so
you secure
grateful
for
the, my family, the community, people that have opened up now with their stories. And mine's not the only story now, sis.
Sure.
I've met hundreds of moms who are going through exactly what I went through. Yeah. I mean, one night, one thing, one, you know, one decision.
Yeah. I'm always telling my kids, don't take any pills that are not, that you don't pop out of the aspirin or ibuprofen. Don't take anything. Because I think the thing is pills seem like not drugs.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's not, you know,
they look like a Tylenol.
It's not a needle.
Yeah.
It's not a powder chopped up. It's not a glass pipe. Mm-hmm. So it's like, seems like, okay, I'm not really doing anything bad here. Right. And then the other thing that is very dangerous is the THC laced vape.
Yes.
The dab carts, which, David's mentor has talked a lot about, which is like the THC is in such a high concentrate that some of these young people will smoke the THC and they don't, it's not regulated at all. And they can be put in permanent schizophrenia.
Yes.
But it's the same thing of the deviousness nature of it, because it doesn't seem like it's a lot because it's just a vape pen.
Yeah.
So it seems like, and
it's very acceptable. It's like,
yeah.
The problem is they're making things look so innocent.
Yeah, that's you know? It, right?
Like
there.
It's it looks okay.
Like it's okay. You know, and
they got a thing called Doritos.
Yeah.
And it's a yes. And it's, I'm not lying. It's called Doritos. And it's a bag, and you open it up, and it's like THC infused, like Dorito knockoffs.
Oh, yeah,
I think this is probably a good time to, like, if people aren't familiar with fentanyl, like, try to give a breakdown of what it is. It is a synthetic opioid that is used for like severe pain, like severe cases of cancer. It's similar to like Oxycontin, but it's like 100 times as strong as heroin. And a big thing now is that it's being made illegally, I think mostly in different countries, like these, they call them, clandestine labs. I'm not even sure what that means, but it's like a put together lab run by streets, and they make it underground. It's not made like, you know, by a pharmaceutical company. They just copy it, they make it, and then they press it into everything. That's why it's so dangerous. It's in like oils. Yeah. It's pressed into pills. You think you're getting a Xanax or something like that. And you die. You just die because it's so strong. And like they put it in like other illegal drugs, cocaine, things like that, just for the euphoria, because it's such a strong effect and it's highly addictive.
Back in my day, they would just cut it with like baby powder,
right,
or baby laxatives, you know, or B12.
Just to make it something.
Right,
it,
to like to increase the bigger, volume.
Make it, yeah.
Yeah, now by just adding a little bit of the fentanyl into it, they're like kind of like doubling their or tripling their supply. And that's where a portion of these overdoses are happening, because this fentanyl's in places where you wouldn't normally expect it. But now even heroin users or opiate users are choosing fentanyl, buying fentanyl directly.
Right. And now you say, people say, you'll see, what is your drug of choice? And they'll say fentanyl.
Oh, my. Well, they say if you're not used to it, it kills you immediately.
Mm.
Yeah.
Other people like
have a tolerance to opioids. Right.
And in 2021 alone, 71,238, and there's many, many more died of fentanyl poisoning. More than anything that we're talking about, the pandemic. And it's rampant. It's rampant.
What's that? Oh, it is?
Oh. Sorry, folks. Sorry. 1 minute.
Under the table.
Hey, this is real.
It is it's technical difficulty.
This is called real life, and I love it. I don't like things perfect because it's not real.
It's good?
Thank you, man.
Yeah, thanks for letting us know that, Joe. Away.
No, but again, you know, it to me, you know, and I hate sounding old fashioned about things. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, it's kind of like whenever I was using, you know, in my younger days, I would like look for the strongest, most potent thing. You know what I mean? And I would, even if I heard somebody like OD'd or something like that, I would go looking for that. That's how ignorant my addiction, you know, served me, you know. But now, you know, it being in literally everything, I just don't get it. That's something I really do not get, is the danger of, like, you know, taking what you think might be a Percocet 5 or a 5 milligram perk or a Vicodin, and it's being like 100 times stronger than a shot of heroin. It's just crazy to me.
Yeah.
You know.
So, back to your story.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
There, at what point do you start looking at this pain and leveraging it, and you see that there is a need for you to share your story, you know, for you to do something like write a book, to talk about this, to create the foundation? At how long after this do you guys decide to do something?
It was pretty soon. Actually, some good friends of ours, Ben Houston and Joe Fitzpatrick, told Matt, he died in February, we have to do something. And it was that September that we had our first Caleb's Cup.
Really?
And it was phenomenal. It was packed. But I wasn't ready then to like be as involved. So I just kind of, I was there, you know. I did a lot of crying. My husband does amazing videos. Every time we do a Caleb's Cup, we either involve other young people or whatever's kind of going on. We have stories and he, you know, puts it all together. It's just a beautiful display. And that year was just dedicated to Caleb. It was just, you know, a video in his honor, and it had a bunch
like a
of,
memorial.
Yeah, it had a bunch of friends that would had saying things to him and stuff like that. So the first year we raised money. Now we're going on our seventh year. I was kind of ready immediately, but I'll be honest with you. The past 2 years have been probably my hardest, even though I've had a wonderful, a beautiful grandbaby, and she's the joy of my life. But in other ways, I think I suppressed the shock.
Sure.
And I have gone through some EMDR therapy. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's for trauma. I've started investing more in myself, and because I'm a people pleaser and I tend to give and give and give and give, and I really was burnt out. So there were some things that I needed to do for myself to kind of work on me, because I realized I'm not healed. And now I realize I never will be healed here on earth. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I want to fix things. I'm a fixer, and I can't fix this. I can't fix that Caleb's gone, and I can't fix another parent that's lost their child. All I can tell them is that there's hope and that you got to find something to live for.
Yeah.
You know, Caleb told me a few days before he died, it was as if God knew what I needed. He said, "Mom, I'm going to make you and Dad so proud of me." He said, "I am going to make you so proud." And I don't know what, I would never say this normally like that, but I said, "If you never do one other thing a day in your life, I will always be proud of you."
Wow.
And 2 days later, he was gone, you know? And and a few days before that, he came and stood at our table and he said, "Mom and Dad, I know I always called you guys like the boring parents." He said, "But thank you for not partying with me." He said, "Because you stuck
sticking
to what
with you,
yeah, you stuck by your beliefs, your core beliefs, and so those are things that I know God knew I needed, you know, and it was rough. I mean, my husband would go and he'd literally lay flat on the gravesite, and we would weep and we would weep, and I was there a few days ago and pulling some weeds that I didn't like being around his grave, and I thought, what a people say, oh, that's so morbid, but that's where I last, you know, saw my son.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, been a journey.
I can really see the reasoning behind, you know, I think, you know, when you say immediately, you know, because, you know, typically you would think somebody would need all this time, this break to go, you know, go do this grief, go through this grieving process, which, I mean, I think everybody's grieving process is their grieving process, but I can really see, you know, wanting to like do something about it immediately. Like I've got to do something. Number one, it's like, it's a good thing. It's kind of like, I got to give this a reason or something. Right. And then I can see again, like these last 2 years being, very difficult for you, because there is another reason why you go, you know, into something like that is, and you might not know it's the reason, but it's like a deflecting. It's a way to suppress, you know, it's a way to not deal with it.
Yeah.
So you're doing something in justification of like, and it's the right thing
you're
to
doing
do.
Doing and doing.
And you're doing, and it's really taken away from you, your ability to really grasp the reality of it.
And on top of that, you know, since COVID, there's a heaviness over the world. And I have such a desire to tell these young people, like, just once, don't do it. Don't do it. And I deal with young people going through depression, anxiety, things that we didn't have to face as a young child, as a young, you know, junior, senior, college, whatever. These kids are dealing with way, way bigger things than we had to deal with.
Wow.
And so constantly. I mean, I've have so many friends who've lost their children to suicide. You know, somebody, a friend, son was doing cocaine laced with fentanyl. He died. I mean, story after story, and you want to fix it, but you know, you can't.
Now, so, you know, doing this foundation, is it giving you like, is there a community coming out of that?
Yes,
of like,
there's such, I will tell you this, there's such great joy. And it's who Caleb would want us to be, because he was the type that would go play his guitar with the homeless person. He didn't care who you were.
Sorry about that. I'm so sorry.
Good? Yeah. Is that good?
Yes.
Okay. Right.
Thanks, Jeff.
Caleb's cup is amazing. Caleb taught in Honduras for about 6 months at our cousin, has a bilingual Christian school there. He taught in their music department. So we now help them. We raise money for them every year. And we give scholarships away to local schools, to seniors.
That is so amazing.
Yeah.
Where does the money go to? The music?
Well, in Honduras, it goes to help, like, it help build their music and instruments for the students.
So cool.
And then at the seniors, it's kind of what, I'm not the typical scholarship person, like you have to have a such and such average. Yeah. That's not my heart, and that's not who Caleb was. I think sometimes we really kind of leave out a lot of students that are so deserving of scholarships.
No doubt.
So I kind of look at the heart, and maybe they're not doing the traditional college, or maybe they're passionate about something else. And that's what we want to feed into, say, hey, we're aware of you. And so also cool. Just needs in the neighborhood, Christmas, or someone can't pay their bill, or they need food. A few days ago, somebody needed food. They just couldn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
We gave them money. Things throughout the year, I just, you know, little gifts from Jesus. You know, I always say God was aware. God is aware of your needs. And that's what we really want to do. We want to be a message to these young people, like, hey, you are loved. You know, it doesn't matter what you've done in the past or where you are right now, but we're here to tell you there's hope and there are people that love you, and we're going to be behind you.
Yeah.
Love it.
So you're beginning to develop this community, and you're giving back. And when does the idea to write?
Oh, to write?
Are you like, okay, I haven't felt enough pain, now I need to write a book? So like,
this book took a while. And everybody was like, you need to write your book. You need to write your book. And I'd see other people who lost a child and they'd like have it out within a few months. And I'm like, I'm not there.
Yeah.
I'm just not there. So it was published in 2021. But it took me the last few months. I was in it. Before when I finished it, I was in a dark place again. Like I was like, this was before everything shut down, but it was getting ready to shut down. I remember going to a Starbucks and like the next week it was closed. And I was like, I'm going to finish this book.
The time came. Yeah. It's a lockdown.
Like the last chapter, I'm going to finish it.
Wow.
You know, I'm just going to do it. And a publisher had reached out to me. I sent him a clip of the story and they're like, we want to publish your book. And, it was an odd time because, you know, COVID, everything shut down and stuff. But I said, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to be honest. I don't cookie cutter anything or make it look beautiful, because life for most people is not just beautiful. There's a lot of crap in it. And so it deals with some things that that I've gone through. And
I do want to say, I have to disagree. It's a very, I've read a portion of it. I just found out today and I dug into it, and it was really hard for me to stop reading.
And
it's very well written. And there's a couple things that I love, and I haven't even read it all. And I don't want to give it away. You know, I don't want to give it enough away. So I love the way you describe your childhood versus childhood of today.
Yes.
You know, making those, you know, distinctions, like how it was when you were raised, and, you know, how we would be, you know, somebody, a kid your age now.
Yes.
It would really be different. I thought
so
that you,
different.
That Even, was so cool.
Like, you know, my parents got divorced, but you didn't have social media to go look at somebody, how good somebody else's life was, or, you know, growing up as a pastor's kid, you know, there wasn't people to, you didn't get all the criticism or a comparison. And I dealt with it.
Yeah.
I dealt with it, and life wasn't easy. We had to sometimes scrounge for food. And yeah. My husband, when he first met me, goes, "Do you guys just live off birdseed?" Because we like never had groceries, you know, but we made it. We made it. And I want to tell kids, hey, you're going to make it. You're going to make it. But we need to let kids know, and young people, college, adults too. Because I recently had somebody ask me, "Why don't you drink?" And I said, "I don't, if somebody wants wine or whatever, I don't have a problem with that. I think to each his own. But for me, it would have been too easy for that to be my resort."
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When you're not, you're able to assess that within yourself to know that if you found something as easy as just drink this and the pain is gone, the memory, and you can go to sleep, it would be really easy to become very dependent on that.
Very dependent.
Yeah.
And I see so many people, that's the reason they're doing it, because they don't want to deal with the pain.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, the pain's going to be there. And that's what this past year has really done for me. I started a journey of walking, and in that time, I just dig deep. I allow God to just dig deep in me, get everything out of me.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing God really showed me was, if my life would have been so perfect, maybe I would have been so full of pride, you know? And I don't want pride. Mm-hmm. I don't find it attractive. I don't find it godly.
Mm-hmm.
But I do recognize that maybe you would have had pride, you know? And I've been so humbled. I mean, I have been so humbled. There's nothing left in me that has, you know?
You the said, pie has been eaten.
Yes. Yeah, I am real as it gets.
Yeah. You can lick the pan if you want.
Get some crumbs, but the pie has definitely been eaten.
Yeah. Francis Chan has this thing where he talks about giving God the chicken wing. Yeah. And he's like, "Here you go, God." And he takes a couple more bites. "Here you go, God." "Here you go, God." You give back to him. It's just the gristle on there.
No, I love Francis Chan.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But you said something about like the last 2 years going into a dark place. As much as you want to share about what does that look like for you when you're in that place, what are the symptoms that, and then what are the tools that you have that keep you from staying there?
Absolutely. I think one thing, especially as women, we're not honest enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I want my journey to be honest so that I can help somebody else. But, probably like I started having a lot of anxiety. And I'll be honest, it's a lot of it's hormones too. So, you know, a lot of it's the hormones, but, things that I hadn't felt about Caleb, all of a sudden I was feeling a little bit of anger. Like, why did you do this to me when I warned you about drugs, when I warned you?
Yeah.
Anxiety of, am I going to lose somebody else? I'd lost my brother to cancer. And then I lost my dad 3 years later, and then to cancer, and then I lost my son 3 years later. So I realized I had some major trauma in my life that I had not dealt with. And so I started having anxiety, and then I would be depressed. And depression is not me. I am like the book when I was young, I loved life.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't depressed. So I realized I got to deal with this because this is not me. It's really not anybody, you know, but, and I just started taking more time for me, and, I started by walking.
Yeah.
And for the first few years, I didn't
want to. A walk is amazing. I'm telling you, man,
when people would tell me that when he first died, like, go do this, go do that. I wanted to slap him. Like, don't tell me what to do right now. Yeah. Right. You know,
what you need
if
to
I
do.
If I want
to
sit and eat a bowl of ice cream, let me do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I wasn't ready for it. And people would say, well, you feel better. I know all that. You know, you know that. But like you said earlier, you have to make that decision for yourself.
Yeah.
I had to hate my circumstances so bad that I had to change it. You know, and I couldn't be selfish. I've got to live for my other kids.
Wow. Yeah,
and I want
to
live.
Got to go on.
I want to live for other young people
that
are going through things. And so I started walking, and I started really asking God to change everything in me. And it's a constant. It's not like it's over. It's not done. But change anything in me that causes me to be anxious. Fear. You know, now I do have fear because I've lost so much. And that fear can overwhelm you. You know,
tell me about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And And then you've got all this stuff going on in the world. You're bombarded constantly, you know, and sometimes I catch myself getting so into it and I'm like, okay, you're getting anxious, you know, watch yourself.
Awareness, self-awareness.
Yes, I've become really more aware of what's triggering me. Mm. And just a lot of changes like that, a lot of health changes, a lot of, I love sugar, but try not to do sugar unless I'm at a wedding or a shower, things like that. And then finally,
me and Leslie can get married right now if you want to. Yeah.
Could you please? Want some cake? You know, and just self-awareness of things that trigger. And then I find, though, okay, that's enough of self, Rhonda, because my greatest joy comes when I can help somebody else.
Yeah.
It really does. I'm not happy when it's just about me. I'm just not. When I say self-awareness, I mean like going for the walk, spending time alone, but I don't want it to be about Rhonda. I mean, I get so sick of myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to help other people. I really do. Like just knowing the other day when that lady didn't know how she was going to have food for the week, that we were able to give her food, that's brings me joy.
That's a real fulfilling. You know? I mean, that is love, man.
Yeah.
And it goes beyond our walls of our home. You know, I think we think, oh, it's just here, but God provides and God extends it. And that's where my joy comes from. And my husband also, he's the same way. You know, we love people and we want to help. That's why I wrote the book. You know, I didn't make a penny off of it by time. It's nothing to do with that. It's just to get the word out, you know, but don't even go down the path Caleb went, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think that's a big purpose of the book, like to prevent, like, you know, get the awareness out, and not just the awareness of what happened, but the awareness of like what you went through, you know, the pain that, you know, you and your family went through and how it affected, you know, so many
everybody.
Loved ones.
Yes.
You know? No, nobody wants to put nobody through that.
No.
Yeah.
You know,
and it, you're describing a lot of like what it is like for us or for me to be in recovery, right? I need to be focused on others and how can I help other people? And, you know, I called someone the other day and I was like, you know, I was just checking in on you and see if there's anything I could do for you.
Yeah.
And he was like, man, I can't believe you did that. That's so nice. I said, well, hey, now, I hadn't done this in a long time, so don't give me no credit. But I know at least when I'm thinking about me and me and me, I know that that's like...
It's unhealthy, man. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not living in the kingdom, under the kingdom of heaven.
Amen.
Right.
Amen.
The other thing that I think is kind of like a reoccurring theme that's coming up for me is, and this is one of the things that why the Jesus story and the Jesus path is still true to me, is that God redeems pain.
Yes.
That God is with us in our pain and God redeems pain. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm trained in this stuff and read all this kind of stuff, but I still don't know a lot about God.
Yeah.
But I do know that.
Yes.
I know that God does not waste our pain.
He does not. That's what's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that.
One thing I really struggled with and caused, I think, a lot of my anxiety and depression was I never had a good dream about Caleb. And he never came to me. And he came to my husband. He came to all of my kids. Mm. Never came to me. And it hurt me so deeply. Mm. Like, and when I would have a dream, it was only the back of him. And I was always trying to save him. I was always saying, don't do that, Caleb. Don't do that. And a few weeks ago, I felt like this heaviness lifted. And I literally saw a vision of him standing with the Lord. And God just had his arm wrapped around him. And they were smiling down at me. You know, it wasn't a dream. It was just a vision. And I thought, Caleb is so in the best hands. He's way better with Jesus than he is with me. Does that take away my pain here on earth? No, but it's my promise of what's going to happen one day.
You know?
And you have to lean on that. I mean, you have to, you know, and because I've had conversations with people that don't necessarily like share my faith, but that's you should be celebrating.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, the one that's lost is going to the place where everybody's trying to go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Amen.
And the best way I can explain that is I have faith in that. I have faith that, you know, when I lose a loved one that they are definitely in a better place. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't take away, like, I will miss them, man.
It doesn't.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not beside me. Like, my life has changed.
I think
my life here on earth has changed dramatically.
When we realize that God listens, you know, he can handle my anger. He can handle my questions. He can handle my screams. Like, God, why? You know, he's going, I got you. You know, I understand, you know. He can handle it. I tell people all the time, listen, let it out.
Yeah.
He can handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. God's not surprised by our anger. And and if you're angry at God, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because you can't be angry at something that doesn't exist.
Right.
Right.
You're trusting him somehow. Or you you're trusting he's there. You wouldn't
there's
be
a
angry.
Good, there's a thing happening.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a back and forth. Something's going on.
Why don't we take a quick break to run the Montana Society?
Yeah.
And then we'll kind of wind this down.
Yep.
Cool.
Montana Society, an inspiring docuseries about a group of addicts who endeavor to repurpose an underground nuclear bunker in Paradise Valley, Montana. Along the way, they learn to work together under the wild leadership of Dean, a financial guru and outdoorsman who has his money on the line. In the end, will they learn to repurpose their pain and the bunker into something new and wonderful? Find out on this season of the Montana Society.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we're back, and as we kind of start to
wind this thing down a little bit,
come full circle, man. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
There was definitely, you know, when you started telling the story, it was like I was like, you know, it's like one of those movies where you're like zooming out, right? Because I'm a dad, right? And David's a dad, and my wife's sitting back there hiding behind your. Your husband there, but it's hard, you know, to hear that. It does, like, it creates fear and anxiety, and I'm already an anxious person, you know, and I think about all those things, right? And I had a very traumatic upbringing, and a lot of crazy stuff happened, and so it's like, you know, and I had a counselor tell me, you know, you're always worried about the other shoe dropping, but she was like, Christian, the shoe dropped already. Like your other shoe already dropped. Yeah. But it is, it's hard when there's something, especially like a child, it's like what they say, it's like, you're literally watching your heart.
Yeah.
And it's tough.
It beats different.
Yeah. I really wish my parents would have gave me a little more of a heads up about having kids.
Having kids and what
like,
you're
yo, are you sure? Because it's hard. Right. And so I can imagine as people are listening, and I know there's a huge community of parents who are dealing with kids who are stuck in that cycle of addiction and are waiting any moment to get that call. And how much of hell that must be, because it hasn't happened. The likelihood of it happening is gaining every day that they continue to use. The worrying about, where are they sleeping? Are they eating? You know, and then that person, your child shows up and they just want some money for food. And so you give them some money for groceries, but they don't buy groceries, right?
It's
they
a very
go buy
tough,
drugs.
Yeah,
and
it's
so it's like the hell of that scenario. Mm-hmm. And what parents who, you know, have children who are addicted.
I used to call my mom like from jail, and I'd be like, Mom, I'm locked up. She'd get the collect call. She'd answer. She'd go, oh, thank God. So I'm so happy. I am just thank you. I would thank God every time you called me from jail. It was like she knew I knew you were safe.
Right.
Because I would be gone. I would just disappear, you know, and just leave her. And I love my mom, you know what I mean? And I would be upset or like, you know, and she would just be overjoyed that I was in jail and not and alive, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So
yeah. Yeah, it's tough.
Sleepless nights, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, when my other son was away at college, you know, I had a lot of fear because his brother just died, you know. I'm like,
answer your phone, answer your phone. Mom, I was just asleep. Answer, I don't care.
Sure.
Right, yeah.
And I just,
Right.
Especially when my daughter lived in L.A. and she wasn't here, it was.
Well, it's in, it's good to hear that you're, you know, and it takes what it takes, right? Mm-hmm. And you're ready now at this point to take this journey inward. And begin the healing on the next level, right? And I'm glad you're addressing. That's a very traumatic experience. Is it off again?
Oh, Lord.
This one.
That's all right, Joe.
That shot's not even a shot. I tell you what, the compliment I get about our show is that I love how your show, you're always like, oh, we'll cut that out. We'll cut that out. We never cut it out.
Hey, my husband always says, audio is the hardest.
Oh, yeah. You can have terrible video. You got bad audio.
Oh,
man.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. Is it back on? Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know where I was talking, but I was really profound for a moment.
It was deep.
It was, but I can, you want me to?
Yeah, you pick it up.
Well, I think it's really great that you're here now and you're able to show us the progress. Like, you know, you're, you know, this is 2016 is 2022, but you're realizing, you know, things that you've, you know, that you've been suppressing, and you know how this was like, you know, the anger and all this stuff that's like coming up. But what I love about that is that you're recognizing it.
Right.
You're trying to be healthy about it. You're putting. I feel like this is like a revamp of some sorts, like, you know, of your book and like the message. Like you're handling it. I love seeing this side, you know, this, this after this time, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Currently right now you're dealing with things and, you're putting it out there and you're sharing it and people need to hear that.
Right.
Man. And I really, truly, truly appreciate that.
If somebody else has the answers that can make it easier, I don't, because grief is like the ocean. I mean, the waves can crash and then it's calm. And sometimes when I feel joy now, I feel it so deeply.
Right.
I didn't probably appreciate the joy that I had at times before Caleb died.
Right.
But now when you have joy,
it's a different sense, right?
Oh, it's like, whew, I'm breathing good today. Life is good. It's I treasure everything a lot more, you know. Yeah.
So what we like to do when we wrap up is for whoever's in our decadent seat of service.
The decadent seat of service.
Is to kind of talk to the audience member, the other parent, who kind of like I described, like that person who their kids are in active addiction. They're not sure where they are. Mm-hmm. Or the parents who have lost a child for really any reason.
Mm.
What would you say to them and who might be considering themselves starting to address this, starting to get active, to give their pain purpose?
Yeah.
What would you say to that person? Purpose.
Well, first of all, I would love to talk to them. I would love to just sit down and share with their heart and hear their heart. But I would say, get up every morning. That's one thing I didn't do. I didn't stay under the covers. Get up, and your pain, your purpose doesn't have to feel good. It doesn't mean it's going to bring you great joy or immediately, but I'd say get up and know that there's hope, and know that every day isn't going to be your next step in the best direction. Some days you're going to feel like, some days I would feel like, oh my God, I went 10 steps back, but that's okay. That's okay. I always tell women or people that are grieving, be where you are in that moment. Because if you suppress it, it's going to come out later.
Wow.
It's going to come out in another way. And whatever it is that you feel passionate about, that brings you hope, if it's just sharing your story on Facebook, or if it's just going to meet a woman for coffee that's going through something, or another friend, do it. Do it. And every day I always say, God, give me one person to bless today. If it's just one person
to bless. I love that. I like that.
Then bless them. And you know what? If somebody's on your heart, like you said the other day, maybe their life looks perfect. Text them anyways and say, I'm thinking about you today. You never, ever know what somebody's going through.
Yeah. All right, Davis, you want to wrap up?
Yes, yes. So is the camera on me?
Yes.
All right. Mind if I get the book right here?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Here we go.
So We have an author with us today. Okay, guys.
Oh, real that's, quick. That's right. My handwriting, but yeah. That's the heartbeat, and then it flatlined.
Oh.
That's your handwriting?
Yeah, I just, that's yeah. That's pretty good. And
right, you gotta pick it.
You know how you see the heartbeat and then
up
it's
higher.
Yeah.
Higher. There we go. Just once. This is a memoir of Rhonda's life and how she dealt with a lot of things. How she dealt with early motherhood, or early parenting is in here, which is a great.
Yep.
It's a great piece of yourself parenting that you shared. I love that. And how she dealt with the loss of her son. Also, there's. Caleb's Foundation. Can you explain
Caleb's
that
one? Cup.
I'm sorry.
It's
Caleb's
an annual
Cup.
Golf tournament that yeah. we help people throughout the year. This year it's October 17th and it's at Bentwater in Ackworth. And it's just a great time of celebration. We honor his life, but we honor other, you know, children or people. And it's just a great way to raise money, have fun, and be together.
I love it. I love it. You heard it, folks. So listen, hopefully this message and Rhonda's story got out to people that need to hear it. We're praying about that, you know, grief, you know, the shock of it, the trauma, dealing with it, leaning on the Lord, leaning mm-hmm. on your higher power. And I think she said it best, and I don't know either how people deal with such grief and such tragedies without having a higher power to support you through it. I just don't know how you do it. And we appreciate everyone listening and watching the Most High app. Please download it. We're on all social media mm-hmm. platforms. You can see us everywhere. The message is real. The people are real. And the stories are real. Thank you guys so much. Deuces.